Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 10, verse number 18. Vistarinatmano yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuya kataya triptirhi Shrinvato nasti me mritam. Ayush, anyone wants to repeat? Vishtarer natmano yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuya kataya triptirhi Shinvato nasti me mritam Vistarinatmano yogam Vibhutim cha janardana Bhuya kataya triptirhi Shinvato nasti me mritam Vistarinatmano yogam Vibhutim cha janardana Bhuya kataya triptirhi Shrinvato nasti me mritam Words, word meaning Vistarena Vistarena in detail Atmanah Your.
Your
yogam,
yogam
mystic power,
power.
Vibhutim opulences
cha
also
jana
ardhana O killer of the atheists yes buyaha
again
kataya
describe
Shritti,
satisfaction,
he
certainly,
Shrinvata,
hearing,
Naasti,
there is not,
May,
my,
Amritam,
nectar.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, O Janardana, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you, for the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. Purport, a similar statement was made to Suta Goswami by the Rishis of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka. This statement is, Vayam tu navachipyama uttama shloka vikrame. Yajtrin vatam rasaknanam swadu swadu pade pade. Quote, one can never be satiated even though one continuously hears the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, who is glorified by excellent prayers. Those who have entered into a transcendental relationship with Krishna relish at every step the descriptions of the pastimes of the Lord. That's the end of the quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 1, verse 19. Thus, Arjuna is interested in hearing about Krishna and specifically how he remains as the all-pervading Supreme Lord. Now, as far as Amritam, nectar, is concerned, any narration or statement concerning Krishna is just like nectar. And this nectar can be perceived by practical experience, isn't it? You have practical experience? Modern stories, fiction, and histories are different from the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, in that one will tire of hearing mundane stories, but one never tires of hearing about Krishna. Isn't it? You had that experience? Never tired of hearing about Krishna, right? If the Bhagavatam class is going for a little bit longer, you never tired. You have the experience? Not yet. It is for this reason only that the history of the whole universe is replete with references to the pastimes of the incarnations of Godhead. The Puranas are histories of bygone ages that relate the pastimes of the various incarnations of the Lord. In this way, the reading matter remains forever fresh despite repeated readings. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. So the context of this verse is, in the previous verse, Arjuna has asked to hear about Krishna's opulences. So Krishna may respond to that, I've already described my opulences previously, and verses such as Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartite. Krishna says that I am the source of the material and spiritual world, realm, and by me everything is operating. So that is an opulence, I've already described it. And iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samamita. And those who know this about me, they perform my bhajan. And from that bhajan, they obtain bhava samamita. They attain love for me. Krishna has already said that, isn't it? Chatur Shloki, this chapter, we already heard this verse. So Arjuna is asked to hear about these opulences. So Krishna may say, I've already spoken of my vibhuti and my yoga. In the Sanskrit of today's verse, if you see the Sanskrit of today's verse, it says, yogam vibhutim cha janardana. So vibhuti refers to his opulences, such as aham sarvasya prabhava, matar sarvam pravartita. I am the source of the material and spiritual realms. That's pretty impressive. If you met someone who is the source of the universe, that'd be pretty impressive, isn't it? And I maintain it. That's even more impressive. To create something is not too difficult to maintain. It's really hard, isn't it? Just like to maintain a clean house. If I were to come to your home right now, would it be acceptable? So to maintain something very challenging, but to speak of creating it. So by me I'm creating, by me I am maintaining, this is very impressive. Vibhuti, that's an opulence. Or earlier on in chapter 7, Krishna's mentioned verses such as Rasoham Apsukonteya. These verses are mentioned by the Acharyas. Those are the verses that I'm quoting. I'm the taste in water. That's pretty impressive. And this way, Krishna's already discussed his opulences. And also yogam. Yogam, Prabhupada translates here as mystic power. Some of our Acharyas translates it as mystic yoga, referring to bhakti yoga. So Krishna already talked about that also in so many places. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samambita. Anyone who understands about my vibhuti, my opulences, then they perform my bhajan, they worship me. And what do they get from that worship? Bhava samambita, they get bhav. Bhav means love for Krishna. So I've already talked about my vibhuti and my yoga. So why are you asking me to speak these things again? So then Arjuna is saying, Vistarena, Vistarena Atmana, I want to hear in detail. Yes, you've given a gloss earlier on in chapter 7, various verses, you've given a gloss of the topics, but now I want to hear in detail these things. You understand? So then Krishna may say, why do you want to hear in detail? First of all, no one ever usually wants to hear anything in detail. They just want the class to get over. So our Krishna may ask, why do you want to hear in detail? So then the second line of the verse says, Bhuya kataya triptir hi shunvato nasti memritam. I want to hear again this kata. Why you want to hear? Triptir hi shunvato nasti. Because I'm never satiated in hearing about you. And he's saying like this, I'm never satiated in hearing about you, hearing about your glories. Why are you never satiated? Because it is just like nectar. For me, Amritam. You understand? That's the verse. That's what the verse says. That's the context of this verse. Isn't that beautiful? Sweet. Very devotional. This chapter is a little bit, feels a little bit rough. I'm this, I'm that. It's like, okay, whatever. But this verse is very, very sweet, actually. It's full of nectar. Amritam. The word Amritam is also coming in the verse. So Prabhupada has described that he's quoting this beautiful verse from the first canto Bhagavata. When the sages of Naimisharanya, they also say a similar thing to Sudha Goswami, that we never tire of hearing about Uttama Shloka. When I first saw this verse as a new devotee, And they say we never tire, and I was thinking we always tired. On Bhagavatam class, many times you see. And oftentimes I'm sitting in the back of the Bhagavatam class, and everyone's head is going like this. You know, and in America, those who do hip-hop music, you know, they oftentimes are saying they'll do their heads like this. So when you're sitting from the back, that's what it looks like they're doing, hip-hop. But if you go in front, they're struggling to keep their eyes open, huh? Eyes feeling like fire. So sages are saying that we never tired of hearing, and conditioned souls, we always tired of hearing. Just opposite, isn't it? Why are you never tired of hearing? Yat shrinvatam rasagnanam, those who have experience of a transcendental relationship with Krishna, rasa, then swadu, swadu, pade, pade, at every step they are relishing nectar. Just as Arjuna is saying here in this verse. So Prabhupada says, now as far as amrita, nectar, is concerned, any narration or statement concerning Krishna is just like nectar. Isn't it? We have this experience. We would like to have this experience. That would be more honest. Huh? It is just like nectar. This nectar is described in the Bhagavatam, one beautiful verse there in the 12th canto. It says, Tadeva ramyam ruchiram navam navam, tadeva shashwan manaso mahotsavam, tadeva shokarnava shoshanam nirnam, yat uttama shoka yasho anugiyate. This is a very beautiful verse from the Bhagavatam. This verse says, those who are singing the glories of Uttama Shloka, then Tareva Ramyam, those narrations are beauty. Beauty incarnate. You understand? Beauty. Beauty means that which is attracting your attention, isn't it? Something that is beautiful attracts your attention. It can be a beautiful form. It can be a beautiful sound. It can be a beautiful smell, a beautiful taste. But when it's beautiful, then you are attracted, isn't it? That is called Ramya. Isn't it? Many times you can see temple room, people are attracted by beautiful forms, isn't it? Hopefully the forms of Krishna, Balaram, Radha Krishna, but oftentimes some other types of forms. One may find their eyes wandering, isn't it? But ugly form, you go like, you don't want to see. Ugly form, you don't want to see. You want to see beautiful form, isn't it? You want to hear some beautiful sound, such as, you are one of the best devotees I ever met. What a beautiful sound. Such beautiful sounds you're making. Huh? You want to smell something very pleasing, isn't it? So in the spiritual world, just like in the material world, you have material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. In the spiritual world, there is also earth, water, fire, air, ether. Just describe 5th chapter of Adi Lila. Understand? Material world, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Spiritual world, earth, water, fire, air, ether. What is the difference between the two? In the spiritual world, all the elements are chinmaya, rasa. They're all spiritual. They're all swarup shakti, the internal energy of Krishna. As such, that sound which is glorifying Krishna is as beautiful as Krishna himself. The beauty of the sound connects you to the beauty of the place or the beauty of the form. So just by hearing about Krishna, the sound, which is made of the same stuff as Krishna's form, then that beauty of that sound attracts you to the beauty of the form, the beauty of the place. And as a result, the endeavor to obtain that reality, that absolute beatitude. Huh? So Tadeva Ramyam, this sound incarnation, if you will, this nectarian sound is Ramyam, this beauty incarnate. Ruchiram Navam Navam. Ruchiram Navam Navam means it is relishable and ever fresh. Huh? So as Prabhupada is describing here, he gives the example of modern stories becoming hackneyed after some time. I'm sure we all, before our devotional service, or maybe even after our devotional service, have a movie that we like a lot. And we've seen it several times. We have this experience. At least before devotional service, we have this experience. Some of us may have this experience after devotional service also. Anyway, we're trying to make progress. You have this experience, some movie that you really like, you saw it a few times, but after some time it becomes hackneyed, isn't it? It loses tastiness. But the katha of Krishna, Ruchiram Navamna, it is tasty, huh, at every step. And it's ever fresh. It never becomes hackneyed. Hearing the same sound, again, same thing is being spoken, but again, relishing as if hearing for the first time. This happens with the spiritual reality, that whenever they see Krishna, it's as if they saw Krishna for the very first time. That would be nice. If that was the case, no relationships would ever break up, huh? In the material world, you see first two, three, four times, and after some time, seen enough. Then there is divorce or separation, isn't it? In the beginning, in the mundane world, the mundane relationships, you know, it's the in the heat of the moment, you know. And, you know, for that last for 1, 2, 3 weeks maybe. After 1 month, I've seen enough. I've seen enough of you. Go away. You don't want to see so much, isn't it? First you fall in love, then you want to see constantly, isn't it? You have this experience? Yes, yes. Who here doesn't have this experience? And then after 2, 3 weeks, maybe if it's really good, let's say 6 months. That's like a really good one. Then after some time, it becomes hackneyed. You don't want to see anymore. I've seen enough of you. Then divorce is happening, separation. This is modern world, but spiritual world, it is as if seeing Krishna for the very first time, hearing that sound for the very first time. So it is mentioned, ruchiram navam navam, relishable and ever fresh, never becoming hackneyed. Then tareva shashvam manaso mahotsavam, this sound vibration is a perpetual festival for the mind. That's cool, isn't it? A perpetual festival for the mind. Just like if you read the 10th canto of the Bhagavad, chapter 35, it describes how Krishna was going to the forest to herd cows. So the gopis were seeing that, and immediately their hearts were attacked by pangs of separation. And so what did they do to solace their hearts? They began performing Sankirtan of the Namruguna Lila of Krishna. So then the rest of the chapter is just their Sankirtan of the Namruguna Lila of Krishna. And then the last verse of that chapter says, and in this way they enjoy the great festival. So it's a very beautiful contrast, because in the beginning of the chapter, it was discussing how the gopis were afflicted by the pangs of separation. And the last verse of the chapter says, in this way they enjoy the great festival. Huh? Very interesting contrast. That is the nature of Harikatha, that is a perpetual festival for the mind. Shashvan Maha Utsavam. Then the third thing mentioned by this Harikatha in this verse from the 12th canto, Tareva Shoka Arnava Shoshanam. It dries up the ocean of grief. Understand? This material world, this is described in the 3rd canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 28. This material world is an ocean of grief comprised of the tears of the conditioned souls. That's sad but true. Sad but true. Naturally, the pervasive psychology of the mundane world is one of lamentation. That is a natural consequence of happiness tied to ephemeral objects. Ephemeral means temporary. So the natural consequence of happiness tied to ephemeral objects is lamentation or grief, isn't it? You have something temporary that you're attached to that you lost. You have experience. Give experience. Someone can say, don't say girlfriend. That's the obvious one, girlfriend or boyfriend. That one we already, that's a given. Some other example you have? Maybe that's the best one. Because everyone can relate. That's something everyone can relate to. You have some relationship, there is breakup. Then the pangs of separation, isn't it? When I was trained as a ballet dancer right before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. I was living in New York, and one of my roommates, his girlfriend had just recently broke up with him. So he didn't get out of the bed for 1 month. Just to go to the bathroom, and in the evening time, he would eat a little bit, like a yogi. Hardly anything, you know? Little yogurt, like Raghunath Das Goswami, you know? He was so much afflicted by this breakup. He was with this girl, apparently something like 7 years, broke up. Deep, heavy pangs of separation. Didn't get out of the bed for one month only. And I was bewildered. I myself was never in any relationship, so I cannot understand. I was like, what's this guy's problem? Just get a new girlfriend. That's the program in the material world. That was a big deal. So then my cousin told, he said, when you fall in love, then you will understand what he's going through. And I said, I don't want to fall in love. If that's going to be the consequence, then I don't want to fall in love. Forget it. Better to not fall in love only. Huh? So like this, he was grieving like anything for 1 month. Understand? This is just a little example of the type of grief that's tied to attachment to the temporary. So this material world is an ocean comprised of the tears of the conditioned souls. You understand? This material world is an ocean of grief. So what is the nature of this Harikatha? Tad evan shoka arnava shosha. It dries up the ocean of grief. I'm produced from the tears of the conditioned souls. Isn't that beautiful? Yarutama shoka yashoka anugiya. Therefore, sing these glories of Krishna. Hear these glories of Krishna. That is the nectar that is being described here. Arjuna says, Bhuya kataya triptrihi shrinvato nasime. I never am satiated of hearing because this is just like nectar. So Amrita, I just told one verse describing what is this nectar. There are so many verses, but then class will go on for several hours and we get tired. Not like Arjuna and the sages. So one other point should be made, that if this is the nature of Harikata, this is the nectar, Prabhupada says, this is the difference between the narrations of the mundane world and the narrations of Krishna. Then why don't I have this experience? That's the next question. That experience is not really practically had at the present moment, perhaps for many of us. Isn't it? You're having this experience? Yolito, not yet. I'm not yet. Me too, not yet having this experience. So what is the reason? So that is described by Rupa Goswami, this verse is there. Sya Krishna nama charitadi sitapa vidya pitopa tapta rasanasya narojikanu. This verse says that although the Namrup Gunalila of Krishna is sweet like sugar candy. Understand? Sita api means although sweet like sugar candy. Isn't it? No one has to instruct us to eat sugar candy, isn't it? No one has to say you should eat sugar candy. That you would do automatically, isn't it? If it's bitter melon, someone has to tell you it's good for your blood. Then you feel a little inspired, I should eat it because it's good for my blood. Or in America, things that taste horrible are all organic, you know? Organic, and then they say, you know, this is tasting horrible. Then they say, it's organic. Oh, okay. And then you eat very enthusiastically like this. In America, it is like this. So this the nectar of Krishna, Namrugunalila, it is sweet like sugar candy. So you don't have to tell anyone to eat sugar candy. And yet we have to instruct people to hear this katha, chant this holy name, repeatedly, sadhakas, not non-devotees, sadhakas. Are you chanting your rounds? Oh, Prabhu, I don't know, I'm not so inspired. And you got to sit them down and try to inspire. Why is it like this? So then Rupa Goswami is telling, avidya pitta utapta rasanasya. Their tongue, or their ear, which is like a tongue for relishing the nectar of the sound, is afflicted by the jaundice of ignorance. Understand? Avidya pitta utaptasya rasanasya. Their tongue is afflicted by the jaundice of ignorance. Narochikanu, therefore, no taste. No taste, isn't it? This nectar we have heard is a perpetual festival for the mind. It dries up the ocean of grief. That means if you're grieving, then what is the secret? You hear Harikata. But oftentimes when devotees are grieving, they don't want to hear anything about Krishna. They want something practical. You know, they're suffering like anything you say. Hear this Bhagavad Gita class. Prabhu, I need something practical. Isn't it like this? They don't want to hear this. Why is it like this? Anarochikanu, no taste. Why no taste? Because affliction by avidya, ignorance. Huh? This beginningless taste for Maya. So, what is the solution? I'm hearing this nectar, but I'm not tasting nectar. Rather, I taste it to be very bitter. Just like someone with jaundice, he eats sugar candy, he tastes that sugar candy to be very bitter. So then what is the solution? Certainly, kalu means certainly, sa'eva, you take that naru-guna-lila of Krishna, jushta, therapeutically. You should take it therapeutically. There's a therapeutic way of taking the naru-guna-lila of Krishna. Just like when you have jaundice, I don't have experience, so I have to take it from the hearing process. When you have jaundice, then there's a therapeutic way of taking sugar candy. In that way, your jaundice condition is gradually vanquished. In the same way, those who therapeutically take this Harikata and this Harinam, adhara means with great regard, with faith, with affection. Adhara means with affection. Anudinam means constantly, regularly. Therapeutically take this Nama Guna Lila of Krishna, then what is the result? Sadvi Kramad Bhavati Ta Gada Mulahantri. Then Kramad means step by step. Gradually, you are able to taste that sweetness. Ta Gada Mulahantri. And that ignorance, which is the cause of aversion to those topics, is gradually uprooted from the root itself. That means ignorance is vanquished. And then you can have this experience of nectar. Just like it's mentioned, even the tiniest drop of bhav bhakti uproots ignorance completely. So what is the nature of bhav? Rupa Goswami is described in Natural Devotion, the nature of bhav bhakti. You know what bhav bhakti? Bhav bhakti is a goal of sadhana bhakti. Understand? Sadhana means practice. Bhav means the goal of our practice. We want some bhav for Krishna, love. So Rupa Goswami, when there is bhav, sometimes there is rolling on the ground, there is hair standing on end, tears coming out of the eyes like a syringe. Sometimes you see in temple room, this is also imitated quite a bit. Just yesterday we saw also. Someone will scream out, and then everyone in temple room will freak out, what's going on? Someone's getting attacked, you know? And then you find a few people rolling on the ground, and then Chokidar says, go on, get out. Get out. Like this, they're imitating. So Rupa Goswami is given, what is the character of one who has bhav? It's not just, these are symptoms that are beyond their control, the Ashta Satika Vikar. But what is the character of one who has bhav? So he discusses that. He mentions 9 features. Because of time, we'll not go through all those. Just one feature we'll mention. Namangani Sadaruchi. He has an insatiable taste for nam, etc. For the hearing, chanting, remembering of Krishna. Insatiable taste. That's for one who has bhav bhakti. So if you have bhav, then we can speak as Arjuna is speaking in this verse. Just even a little bit of bhav. This experience is accounted for. So there's a very nice verse. Not a verse, it's a statement of Sanatana Goswami in Briya Bhavatamrita. It says, Siddhasya Yasarupam Sadhakasha Tasadhanam. What is natural for the Siddha is exercise for the Sadhaka. Very beautiful verse. The statement is there in Manavistikas. What is natural for the Siddha? So what is natural for the Siddha? To constantly hear and chant about Krishna. Like Arjuna is saying, I never tired of hearing. That is a very natural thing for him. But for us, what is natural for the Siddha becomes exercise for the Sadhaka. In other words, we are to gain spiritual fitness. We have to exercise our heart, if you will. Just like sometimes you exercise the body, especially men, women perhaps also, I don't know, but especially men, so the tendency maybe to exercise the body, have some muscles. I'm a skinny guy, so no one will care about me. That is a good thing. But you have nice muscles, then you wear short shirt. You have to show. Working out, you know. the tendency is there. Then you can attract, isn't it? You gain the fitness you want to show. So similarly, not exactly, that was just a funny example, but we are to gain a spiritual fitness, one is to exercise one's heart. How? Just as the siddhas, those who have bhav, prema, they constantly hearing chanting, so the sadhaka, he is also constantly hearing chanting, but that is his exercise to gain the fitness. There are activities for invoking love, and there are activities for expressing love, or in general, there are activities for invoking certain emotions, and there are activities for expressing emotions, isn't it? Actually, you'll find that in all languages, verbs express both action and emotion, because emotion compels activity. So then those activities can be for invoking an emotion or for expressing an emotion, yes? For a simple example, you pray to the deities. Why do you pray to the deities? So you can invoke a sense of closeness to Krishna, isn't it? And pure devotees like the gopis, they also pray to the Lord. Why? As an expression of their emotion. You follow? So we pray to invoke an emotion. They pray to express an emotion. Isn't it? So the actions of bhakti are for invoking bhav. Understand? Then when you have bhav, this thing is there. This insatiable relish of nam, rupa, buddha, lila, Krishna. And then when you have bhav, then the same activities take place for expressing bhav. You understand? They have technical terms also. I'm saving you the bewilderment of all the technical terms. So in this verse, Arjuna's bhavuka, premika, devotee, so he's wanting to hear about Krishna constantly. Why? Because it's an expression of his bhav. I want to hear about you. This is the nature of the bondage of love. You understand? There's a nice verse there. Chanaka Pandit, actually, he says that there Although there are many types of bondage in this world, the bondage of prema is the most complete. Prema raju vini bandhana. There is no other bondage as complete as love, the rope of love. Then he gives an example. He's a very good example, actually. He says, although the bumblebee is able to penetrate through wood, apparently, I have to take that on hearing, never seen. Although a bumblebee can penetrate through wood, he becomes confined within a lotus flower and takes no action. Now, what is a lotus leaf compared to wood? He can easily just bust through the lotus leaf like Superman or something, you know? And yet, he becomes confined within the lotus, and when the lotus closes at dusk, he dies. But he doesn't protest. So this example is given as an example of the bondage of love. So here, Arjuna is bound to Krishna by love. He has bhava for Krishna. This is the nature of bhava. Now I want to hear about you constantly. It's an expression of bhava. But when we also want to hear about Krishna constantly, because of our avidya, we don't have any taste. But we are doing that to invoke bhava. That is the purpose of sadhana. There is no other purpose of sadhana. All of our problems in life is due to not having bhava for Krishna. Understand? Any problem you have in life, just think about any problem you're having in life. Whatever it may be, just meditate. You know, I'm sure you have a list of 20 things already like that. No problem. So I have a headache. Yes, headache is there, but if it distracts me from hearing about Krishna, that means no bhava. You understand? If I have headache for Krishna, that would be nice. if I have a headache and that distracts me from hearing about Krishna, that's because there is no bhava. Otherwise, if there is bhava, nothing will stop you from hearing about Krishna, not even hell. Now, some colorful stories there. I don't think this is in the Shastras, though, but we often may have heard it about Krishna having a headache and Narada Muni going to various devotees. And I don't think that's actually a Shastric reference. It's just a nice, colorful story. But the idea here is that the gopis didn't care of even going to hell. Why? Because they have bhava. But I remember when I first was preaching, I always found that to be a very attractive idea when I was first distributing books and so on. And I used to say that to students. The devotee doesn't even care to go to hell to serve Krishna. Then one day I thought about that in relation to myself, and I was like, that would be too heavy. If I get sick, I'm already not able to think about Krishna. If I go to hell, I'm finished, you know. So I was thinking, I don't want to go to hell. That's a little bit too heavy. I better speak more on my realization, you know. I'm trying to get out. So when you have bhav, all problems are solved by bhav. You understand? By love for Krishna. Whatever problems anyone is having is solved by bhav. And that is the purpose of sadhana. The purpose of sadhana is not to be good to others, please. That's like boring. And I mean, it's nice, it's more goodness and appreciable on one level or another. But that's not the goal of sadhana. In fact, if you have bhava, you will be good to others naturally as an inherent attribute. You won't have to practice it. I'm practicing being good to others. That's lame, you know? And tends to develop, one may tend to develop a self-righteous pathos also. I'm showing you compassion. Please take this book, or I'm being compassionate towards you. That's really lame. If you have bhava, you will be compassionate. You understand? No need to go for compassion separately. Leave that over there. That will come when I get bhava. Therefore, the goal of sadhana is bhava. You understand? So we, like Arjuna, wanting to hear about Krishna nonstop as an expression of love, we also hear about Krishna constantly to get that love. Then, when we get that love, then you can taste that nectar. It gives cognition of that nectar. You understand? Yes. That's it. Siddhasya yat sorupam sadhakashta tat sadhana. What is natural for the siddha is exercise for the sadhaka. All right, that's my class. I went on way longer than I normally like to. Are there any questions? Or comments, concerns, anything anyone wants to add to the discussion? Any realizations you'd like to share? Yes. Mother.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Today I just had one comment. I was reading Bhakti Tirtha Swami's book, Leadership in a Spiritual Age, I think it's called. And he made one comment actually about the material world. I'll see if I can find it. Basically, he said that whatever you see around you is either an expression of love or a call for love. So he's saying that even in the material world, everything that you see, every action and all words are either an expression of love or a call for love, which is interesting when it comes to all the negative reactions and activities in the material world.
Yeah, very similar to what we're discussing from Rupa Goswami's. Anything else? Yeah, okay.
Thank you for your talk. Why do you think there's so much depression in the world today? Lots of people die of suicide, lots of young men kill themselves. Why do you think is that?
Well, speaking philosophically, because they're in the mode of ignorance, that sounds a little bit harsh, but it's true. People are actually, because the activities in the material world are the interplay of the modes of nature. Are you familiar with this topic, modes of nature? So then the material world, what's going on in the material world is the play of the modes of nature. And the conditioned soul's identifying with his vehicle is moving along with the play of the modes of material nature. And so when there's influence of passion, they're going after material sense objects. And inevitably, because their happiness is tied to temporary objects, as I was describing in the class, when those objects are taken from them, then they go into ignorance, which usually, especially nowadays, manifests itself as a deep depression. And a lot of the reasons that depression is so deep is because no one's been trained how to deal with the material energy. We've not been trained about the ephemeral nature of the material world and how to interact with it. So it's just like, when you know the nature of fire, you know how to interact with it, right? Oh, fire burns, so I don't touch it, but I can cook with it. So similarly, this material nature has its own qualities, and there should be education how to interact. But in our modern educational systems, we don't even know that we're not this body, and consequently, we don't know how to interact with the energy. So we interact in terms of the modes of passion, oftentimes, especially in human life, means passion is predominant. So we're chasing after objects, and when those objects manifest their temporary nature, then we tend to go into the mode of ignorance. And the mode of, that's natural for any one of us, actually. But when you're devoid of spiritual training, you don't know how to deal with that play of the mode. So like for devotees who are properly trained, they also experience the same thing. Some passion is coming, they go after sense objects. Same thing, you can see it in the temple muscle. No, anywhere you go, you can see. And then their happiness is somehow taken away from them, and then ignorance will come. They feel that some lamentation. But they're not overwhelmed by it because they know this is the nature of the material world. They've already got some spiritual training, so that training will help them to deal with that in a way that's progressive. Just like in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is one of my favorite chapters, although it seems like there's nothing spiritual in that chapter, there's like a bunch of names and no one really cares about it. But actually, the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Arjuna Vishara Yoga, the yoga of dejection. So that's interesting because the word yoga in context means communion with Krishna or communion with the absolute truth. And so it's saying the yoga of dejection. So how does dejection lead to communion with the absolute? Because dejection is the pervasive psychology of all living entities in the material world. As I was describing, that this material world is an ocean comprised of the grief of conditioned souls. And that's because their happiness is tied to temporary objects. So when that dejection leads one to inquiry about the absolute, it's called this yoga. And so that's what you see in chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita. You see Dhritarashtra is lamenting, Duryodhana is lamenting, and Arjuna is lamenting. And you see how Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana are dealing with that lamentation in terms of material calculation. Duryodhana is trying to manipulate Dronacharya and Bhishma with some clever words. And Dhritarashtra is asking this really awkward question. You know, what did my sons and the sons of Pandu do, having assembled in the battlefield, desiring to fight? That's like a really awkward question. My sons are there, the sons of Pandu are there, they're desiring to fight, they're on a battlefield. What did they do? They probably fought. It's like a really awkward question. Just like, it's like, I'm hungry, I went to the restaurant, the waiter brought the food. What did I do? You know, it's like, you probably ate it, right? You know? It's like, but that awkward question was a manifestation of his lamentation. He was scared about what was about to take place in the battlefield. So that chapter one is representative of the pervasive psychology of the conditioned animation. And then Arjuna is also lamenting. He sees his family members, and because we often identify by my I is often defined by my, isn't it? I define myself in terms of what I have oftentimes. So Arjuna's sense of identity is connected to these individuals who are about to be killed. So that means the sense of himself is about to die. So he's also lamenting. But how did he deal with that lamentation? He began to inquire about the absolute truth. From the absolute truth. So that was pretty convenient. So he begins inquiring about the absolute truth and the absolute truth. So then when our dejection leads to inquiry, which is what spiritual training is really all about, because we will also be moved by the modes of nature. We are moved. Sometimes we're in the mode of goodness, we actually maintain the cleanness of the house. In the mode of passion, we may actually clean it. In the mode of ignorance, we just get home, throw everything down, just and jump in the bed. YouTube, or something really just ignorant, you know, not at all spiritually progressive. So we're also being moved by the modes of nature. But because there's some spiritual training, we know how to, hopefully, get out of the play of the modes and actually make step-by-step progress towards Krishna. In a modern day, people have no training. So they're also being moved by the modes of nature, but without the spiritual training, they're becoming overwhelmed by the modes. So depression, suicide, this is a mode of ignorance, and it happens to devotees as well. And the difference is a lack of training. Not knowing how to deal with that, then they are engulfed by the modes of nature, and then they do foolish activities. Otherwise, nothing in the material world is really that serious. Actually, it's a big joke. If you're a little bit enlightened, everything in the material world is a big joke. And you can actually see it. It's just like a cartoon almost. And I often joke in Chicago, I say that the material world is a comedy channel for the spiritual world. Because the types of things conditioned souls do is just ridiculous, actually. And it's just a play on the modes of nature. So when you're a little bit enlightened, you can see it as such. Even you can do something, just like, for example, common experience, I'm sure. Big feast is there. You have a big plate, so many preparations are there. And you go and sit down, and you're just about to eat your prasadam. And you look over, and someone's got a cheesecake that you don't have. So you're like, kind of, hey, Prabhu, where did you get that from? You know, the mind is agitated. And he said, oh, I got it from over there. Oh, are there any more left? No, this is actually the last one. So, you know, he's got this huge slice, you know. And so you're like, you think it's this, oh, what? You want to, like, break me off half? Give me a little bit off. And so then when you're not enlightened, then you can't even enjoy your meal. You also have all the other preparations. But you just don't have that one preparation, you cannot enjoy your meal. You'll be miserable the whole meal. You're not relishing anything. That's because you don't have that cheesecake. But if you're a little bit trained up, a little bit spiritually enlightened, you can see that's just a play of the modes of nature. And so you'll see that. You'll see the agitation, but you'll just become removed from it. Krishna speaks, so many verses in Gita speaks like this. A recent one I was studying with the devotees in Chicago. I do Bhagavad Gita classes every morning. Through Skype, and we just finished chapter 5, and one of the verses there, it speaks about how the devotee, well, the enlightened person, which could be a devotee also, remains happy in the city of 9 gates, that means the body. How? Because he's just, by the mind, renouncing everything to the material energy. It's just a play of the material energy. So you're also the same scenario from an enlightened perspective. He sees the mind is also getting envious. Where did cheesecake come from? They didn't have cheesecake when I was up there. I came here before him and they didn't have cheesecake, you know? And then if you're a little enlightened, you become detached from that. You start laughing, like, look at my nonsense mind is doing. It's nonsense. But when you're not enlightened, then you eat everybody. Just finish your meal, 2 seconds, get up and walk to the thing and watch it. Then the whole afternoon is spoiled just because you didn't get a cheesecake. So like this, if you're a little bit enlightened, everything in the material is a big joke, actually. It is just to play the modes of material nature. But when you're not enlightened, it's heavy. It's very heavy. And so in the material world, the living entities are identifying with their bodies. And that way, they're moved by the play of the modes of nature. Not being spiritually trained, they're overwhelmed by that. And then sometimes in the mode of ignorance, they're doing foolish things. It's very unfortunate. And then the more so fortunate thing about it is that even after gaining, let's say, positive spiritual sangha, they're not able to avail themselves to it. This verse is there from the first canto of Bhagavatam. You may have heard it. Manda sumanda manta yo manda bhagyo. Suta Goswami, not Suta Goswami, Shonaka Rishi is describing the symptoms of the age of Kali, the people in the age of Kali. First symptom he mentions is that they are short-lived. Alpapayusha. They have very short lives. But even if they live long, they're lazy. And lazy means lazy for the right thing, not lazy for the wrong thing. You know, if you want, get invited to some party, everyone's like, woo, ready to go. We're about to go to MBT tonight. You want to come and fire it up. Then you say, I'm about to go to Srimad Bhagavatam class. Lazy for the right thing. But even if they're not lazy, sumanda matayo, even if they're not lazy to go for spiritual things, they are dull-witted. Sumanda matayo means they have dull intellects. And I think we can account for that in our own hearing of the Bhagavatam class. The intellect is very dull, not able to understand anything also sometimes. Especially if the speaker is a little bit more sophisticated, then we're just like, we finished, no question of understanding. So mandamanda, dull intellects. And even if they don't have dull intellects, manda bhagya, they are unfortunate because they don't have the right type of association. So they might be really smart, but they don't have the right type of association. And then upajruta, and even if they get the right type of association, they are afflicted. Afflicted by attachment and aversion. Therefore, they cannot avail themselves to the right association. So that's the most unfortunate part about the modern lack of training in spiritual life is that they, even if they get a chance for some uplifting sangha, they can't avail themselves to it. Just like in chapter 1, Duryodhana is getting a chance to associate with Bhishma, and Dhritarashtra has Sanjaya. Sanjaya is an exalted disciple of Vyasadeva, but they cannot avail themselves to that association because they're afflicted by attachment and aversion. But Arjuna was able to avail himself. That's the difference between him and those other two personalities. So that would be my answer. That it's due to the mode of ignorance. Due to lack of spiritual training, they don't know how to deal with the play of the mode of ignorance. And therefore, they're overwhelmed. They do foolish things. And as a even sadder reality of that, a more sad reality of that, is that even if they have an opportunity to uplift, they can't take advantage of it because they're too afflicted. Therefore, we are doing this harinam. Everyone's finished. Just chant Hare Krishna. And we chant Hare Nam, they get a little attracted, a little purified. And then, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is taught, I was reading this on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. He says the purpose of kirtan is to attract them to Hare Katha, which was very interesting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was always underscoring the hearing of Hare Katha from the appropriate persons. So we do, now they cannot hear anything because they're too afflicted or they're too dull-headed, etc. So you're doing the kirtan, why? To attract them to Hare Katha. Then when they can hear, they can get trained. They can become enlightened very easily. Although one can theoretically become enlightened by chanting the holy name, but what type of holy name you got to be chanting, you know, to get that full-blown enlightenment. Therefore, you have to hear also. You have to hear from right sources. As I've mentioned before, the holy name is like the sun. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's example. And Hare Katha is like the sun ray. So just like if you want to see the sun, you need the help of the sun ray. So if you want to chant Hare Nam properly, you need the help of Hare Katha. So therefore, we're doing this kirtan. Why? We want to attract people to Hare Katha. Then Shravan Kirtan will save their life. As the verse I quoted today, earlier on in the class, Tadeva Eva Shoka Arnava Shoshanam, it dries up the ocean of grief created by the tears of the conditioned souls. So that's my answer, a little bit long-winded. Anything else? Anyone wants to say anything else? Yes.
I enjoy listening to you. It's really, you make it fun. I'm just confused about the book is saying that we're separate from Krishna or love, and that is not my understanding, and that we have to, there's something wrong with us, we have to do all these things to achieve something. so that doesn't sit right with me, because we're part, we're one.
Sure.
Right. We're not lower than Krishna.
Yeah, we can say that. That is
but
fine.
Anyway, I'm a newbie, so my heart is just questioning some of this.
Okay.
It doesn't feel...
So I'll express it.
Okay.
So our philosophy is that we're one and different from Krishna. Just as the sun and the sun ray are one and different. In simple language, the sun and the sun ray are one in quality, but there is some difference only in the sense that the sun is a source for the sun ray. So there's a oneness and difference. In quality, there's sameness, and quantity, if you will, there's difference. So the difference between ourselves and the absolute truth lies in that we can become illusioned about our transcendental nature. Spiritual, completely spiritual. So at the present moment, although we're complete spiritual entities, as Krishna is a complete spiritual entity, we are forgetful of that reality. So as a result, we are identifying with something that we're not.
Yeah.
And we've forgotten our transcendental or spiritual nature, our complete spiritual nature. And so in this sense, we're having to do something. We call it sadhana. Actually, every process calls it sadhana. A sadhana to remove the illusion that we are something material and we're actually completely spiritual. And so there are different processes for doing that. The process that we follow, of course, is bhakti. So in bhakti, we're creating the appropriate word here is interpenetration. The word interpenetration means that the two objects become completely one and simultaneously they maintain their individuality. So in prema or in love, I and the you become the we. You understand? They become one and we. That might be like a very poetic way of expressing it. The I and the you become we. So there's still individuality, but there's oneness that's created by love. So that's the process that we adhere to. We want to get that love for Krishna that creates the type of oneness. Of course, we're already one in the sense that we are manifestations of Krishna. And it would not be incorrect from a certain angle of vision to say that we are Krishna. And in certain purports in chapter 9, Prabhupada says, we are Krishna, we're like tiny Krishnas, you know. Krishna's like a big Krishna, like a tiny, Prabhupada writes in this way. So that would not be wrong to express it like that from a certain angle of vision. At the same time, there's another angle to it, that in the spiritual reality, there's also a trans-phenomenal variegatedness. So in the material world, you have variety because of the play of material energy. In the trans-phenomenal or spiritual world, there's also variety due to spiritual energy. And so, although everything that spiritual reality is made of one substance, our language is the internal energy of God, is made of one substance, internal energy, but that one substance manifests so much variety at the same time. So there's oneness and difference, that's our way of expressing it. And we want to enter into, for bhakti, the goal is to enter into that spiritual variety, where there's oneness and variety, and there's the interplay of that variety as well. It's like a spiritual dynamism? I don't even know if that's a word. I might be making up words. It's dynamic. Whereas there's another, it's viable. There's another idea of just merging into the oneness. That's a viable spiritual idea, although it's one that we do disparage often in bhakti because we want love. You know, we don't want to just static, peaceful life. So that's...
The love, though, it sounds like one is insinuating all the time that we're needy and we're separate from love. So that just is a little difficult for me to...
Yeah, I think if you think of it more practically and not philosophically, you can reconcile the misunderstanding. It means that we practically see that we're exploiting jivas at the present moment. We exist to exploit one another. That's practical. I'm moving out of the realm of philosophy into the practical reality. We exist as exploiting jivas. Krishna has used such language also in chapter 7, verse 5 of Bhagavad Gita. So then, in that sense, we are separate from that reality of love. Or you can separate in the sense that there's a curtain, if you will, and this language is also used by Krishna, the curtain of yoga maya, blocking our connection with that reality and where we're at now. So then that curtain can be removed. that carding can be removed, then we can experience that spiritual oneness, if you will, but in prema, with variety. So if you can reconcile that discomfort in the heart by looking at the practical situation and thinking also of our ideal. Oftentimes you will find that there is a separation between our highest ideals and our reality. And human life essentially is about decreasing that gap. So if you look at our reality on a practical level, we are existing as exploiting jivas in this material world. And if you can remove the curtain that's blocking your perception of that absolute beauty, then, you know, all is good. Until then, all is exploitation. And that's practical. Although there may be some idealists there, this is also the reality that we practically experience, either personally or vicariously. So it may take some meditation, but you can reconcile the discomfort by that. All right, it's 6 o'clock. If there are any final statements anyone would like to make or say. Thank you. I think you had your hand up. You wanted to say something. Okay, you're finished. No. Okay, then. Anything else? What's that?
Srimad Bhagavatam,
yes,
preached by Suta Goswami,
okay,
in Naimisharanya.
Okay.
So in surrounding any other holy places, is there?
Are there any other holy places?
Yeah, yes.
Vrindavan Dham.
Yeah, Naimisharanya particularly, I'm asking.
Are there any other holy places?
Because now Vrindavan, we are staying, no? ISKCON is there, near Bankim Bihari temple is there, Radharaman temple is
okay.
there. Like that I'm asking, any holy other, 5,000 years before, any other holy
within Naimisharanya.
Yeah.
Are there any other, I don't know, any of those? Ayodhya, okay, there you go, there's one. He's saying Ayodhya.
Yes, yes.
Near,
yes.
I'm asking near Naimisharanya.
Yeah. Emphatic, yes, Balaram, Mekam, Pilgrimage, all over, Vidura, there are many holy places all over.
I'm asking if I want to go to Naimisharanya, only I visit that Naimisharanya or inside Naimisharanya, any other visit sightseeing places there, I'm asking. Sightseeing means visiting for Yatra,
yeah.
Darshan.
You can probably Google it. Any other holy places? I don't know. I kind of keep my energy focused on Vrindavan, and that too within the Krishna Balaram complex. Even within Vrindavan, I don't desire to go probably anywhere. You know, even parikrams and all these things, I'm not so into that. I just like to be in Krishna Balaram. The vicinity, that's where all my energy is. So I'm very unaware of other places. I like it like that. That's a personal thing. But I'm not aware. Maybe you can find some devotees who are aware. Or otherwise, Google might be a good option.
Okay.
Thank you, Ruby. Nice class. Thank you for the class. Hare Krishna.
Okay, man. Thank you all very much for tolerating me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.